Howdy do, buckaroos. Welcome to the Mac Observer's Daily Observations Podcast. Today is Wednesday. It is the 24th of March, 2021. I'm your host, Kelly Gamont. With me today, I have Charlotte Henry. Hi, Charlotte.
Hello.
Glad you're here. Also with me today, I have Dave Hamilton. Hi, Dave.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Glad you're both here because I want to talk to both of you about, Charlotte, an article that you linked out to about Mac OS X turning 20.
Yes, I freaked you all out this morning. Well, you all came in looking at feeling a little bit older than you had done because it's 20 years since Mac OS X first launched. I think it had been revealed a little bit earlier, but this is the day where 20 years ago, where it officially became available to real life human beings. And obviously, it's had a huge and profound effect on Apple and where the company has gone and how we interact with our Apple products. Obviously starting with the Mac, but I think the influence on other Apple operating systems is pretty clear for those of us that use them as well. So yeah, it's a fascinating story of how this operating system to rule them all almost. It's changed things quite dramatically.
That's an interesting point, right? Because it's not just that 20 years ago, Mac OS X, as it was called at the time, was launched. But as you said, the foundation of that is at iOS and Watch OS and iPad OS and TV OS.
Yeah.
It's all. And now, of course, what we call Mac OS. And so, mm-hmm. And it was available for purchase 20 years ago today.
Yeah, exactly.
It was $129. It was not free.
Yes.
Yeah. And that created some problems down the road when they started making it free. I remember there was some SEC related issue where they couldn't release a free update to the prior one because they had charged for it. Like there was a whole thing that they had to like do some end around to figure out how to like actually get it in people's hands for free.
I can't remember what it was, but I remember there being something about that.
Yeah. It was like, well, we can't really give you this update, but here's how we're going to do it. And it was ridiculous.
I remember it being very, very confusing kind of at first. But of course, it's been so long that it's all very hazy now.
So. Right. Right.
I can genuinely remember when I first. So I did not own an Apple computer in 2001 when Mac OS X. If I say Mac OS X, Kelly will fly over to the UK.
I just get a little twitchy about it. It's okay.
Yeah.
Please don't.
I was not around when I don't remember using a Mac, particularly when this first came into being. I didn't own a laptop that ran it. But I do remember when I first got Macs and having to pay for updates in the way you're describing, because it didn't just end once you'd bought the first version, which was Cheetah. I think mm-hmm. I remember paying for Lion. Was it? I definitely must have paid for Lion.
Yep.
When was the first one that was free? Was Mountain Wait. Lion free?
Was it? I think it was it Mountain Lion?
I can't remember the exact one, but I definitely remember paying for a couple of that.
Yeah,
I remember playing for
I
life.
Paid for several, I remember.
We all did.
Yeah.
Yeah, happily. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, and I remember going to launch parties. We had Apple resellers here that would have parties, and then you could
Kelly,
go
I
and
think you might
hang out
nerd.
With people. You know, I've heard that. And I probably heard it at a launch party for a new version of Mac OS. It was interesting in that sort of community way that we didn't have a whole lot of, you know, it was sort of, you know, get together with people in person more than anything else and, you know, swap tips like, you know, Dave, did you know about this thing that you can do in Mac OS X if you just open the terminal and type the thing? You know, there was a lot of that going around. So, yeah.
I find this fascinating. Sorry, Dave, just because in my time of using Apple devices, they've basically not become the kind of outlier thing that everyone that you have built the community around in the way you and Dave have described,
mm-hmm.
but like they have become very mainstream, and that it's kind of fascinating to have. I think it's probably more fascinating for you having seen both sides of it, but actually it's kind of interesting seeing it from being having them when they're in the mainstream as well.
Yeah, yeah. No, totally. It Apple and Apple users, I should say, you know, specifically with Macs,
exactly.
But even with the Apple II, we were very used to being the underdogs. And so it was, and that mentality is what I think still exists today, in so much as the fan base, if you will, of Apple products. Like somehow they've been able to keep a lot of that alive, even though they're no longer the underdog in many ways, right? I mean, if you look at numbers, there's still more Android phones than iPhones. Okay, fine. There's still more Windows machines out there than Macs. Okay, fine. But other than that, it doesn't really feel like Apple's an underdog at all.
No.
But it used to be 100% across the board. Yes. Apple, and again, Apple users, we were all in it together. And mm-hmm. it very much felt like Apple was our company, right? Right. Like we're part of this club, if you will.
To go from an Apple user from somebody who was an Apple user when the Wired cover came out, to someone who was standing downtown in downtown Portland and saw somebody, when there was a Microsoft store downtown, and somebody said, "Well, what are all the signs in their window for?" This is like another person waiting to cross the street, you know, a couple of people. And one of the people said, "What is it there that all the signs are up for?" And they said, "Oh, Microsoft is trying to make their own iPad." And to hear that sentence come out of, like, it was a couple of people with like Saks Fifth Avenue shopping bags, right? And like, not people you would expect to be having this conversation. And what they know about it is like, it's the thing from Apple, but Microsoft is trying to make one. And to hear that casual mention as I was standing there, was very, very weird to have come from the Wired magazine cover that said Prey on it with the Apple logo, and from there to this, you know, and hearing people talk about like, "Oh, what iPad do you have? Oh, you know, I have a Samsung Galaxy, whatever," like it's Coke, you know, or a Band-Aid, you know, kind of a thing, is really a trip. It's kind of a hard adjustment to make, honestly.
I think, unlike you guys, I think my basically entire Apple computer experience is, and I guess to me on the show today, Kelly, is because my entire Apple computer experience is basically Mac OS X.
Yeah.
I would never really have used them in any serious way that didn't have that on it. I was saying to you guys off air that while the first laptop I got was, you know, probably a Dell laptop or so, a Windows laptop. Mm-hmm. At school, we were lucky enough to have a lab of Macs. And so that's how I learned kind of computing and that kind of thing. And given that that would have been kind of from 1999, 2000 onwards, that it would all have been Mac OS X.
Yeah.
And so kind of, I probably don't appreciate in its way what a profound shift for the company it was. But as we said at the top of the show, look at the different Apple operating systems now. The kind of scale of the shift that brought in is very apparent.
Yeah. And we'll talk about and I want to ask Dave about what it was like to cover this kind of fundamental change, because you were around then doing that sort of thing and I was not. But first, I would like to take a minute and tell you about our sponsor this week. And our sponsor this week is She's Birdie. They make the Birdie personal alarm. It's a personal safety alarm. It's very easy to carry, very easy to use. It activates with a quick pull of a tab sort of off the top of the device. And when you give that a pull, it treats you and anyone in your vicinity to a very, very loud 130 decibel alarm and a very bright flashing strobe light. And this is a really good way to draw attention to a situation that you may want a lot of attention drawn to and the instigator may not. So it can come in very handy. It's not like pepper spray where you have to carry it around, you know, make sure it's filled, that sort of thing. And then if you use it, like, it can blow back in your face and now you're not in a good situation either. So you can use it confidently. It's very easy to use. It's not, it's just the right amount of pull when you pull the tab to make sure that you actually meant to do it. The Birdie itself sort of looks like one of those small rectangular phone chargers. So it looks really inconspicuous. It comes in a bunch of nice colors and it's got a keychain clip so you can put it on your keys or clip it to your bag. And it just, like I said, it looks really innocuous. So it's, again, easy to use and not very big and comes in very handy if you find yourself in that sort of situation. You can get 15% off just by being my listener, because I'm going to give you the secret URL for that. You go to shesbirdie.com/TDO, shesbirdie.com/TDO. You will get 15% off your first purchase at shesbirdie.com/TDO. We'd like to thank She's Birdie for sponsoring the show today. Now, Dave, we've talked about before how long Mac Observer's been around. It's been a while. And we've talked about how much stuff you've covered in that amount of time. So because Mac Observer came on the scene slightly before Mac OS X did, I'd like to know what that change was looked like for you as somebody so trying to report on it.
Mac OS X came on the scene about a year after we started Mac Observer. Mm-hmm. And then it was launched a year after that. Right. It was a fascinating thing. This is a weird little anecdote, but every time I hear someone say Mac OS X, I am reminded of the first Macworld All-Star Band gig, which was in June or maybe July. It was in New York in 2001. Mm-hmm. at the Cooler in New York. It was a club that doesn't exist anymore. down in the Meatpacking District. So we call it Meepaw, right? Yeah.
Yeah.
But I think it's like an Abercrombie or something now. But but we played this gig and we covered Ain't That a Shame, the old blues tune, but we did it a la Cheap Trick. And Paul Kent was the leader of the band at the time and had everybody write a verse for the song. And Bob Levitis's line for his verse was, "It's better than sex. It's Mac OS X." And for some reason, that's what has stuck in my head every single time. But that communicates how excited the community was about it and how excited Apple wanted the community to be about it. Like, it's a far more felt change than anything really that we've seen since that's happened to the Mac. Obviously, bringing out an iPhone, that's a very sort of seismic thing. But in terms of what happened to the Mac, you know, even the M1 Macs, if you go from a, you know, an Intel Mac to an M1 Mac and you're not a nerd and you don't like care to dig under the hood or anything, it feels exactly the same. It might be faster, it might have better battery or whatever. Like, it's this nice change, but it feels the same. You can use it. And if you had started with Mac OS X or Mac OS X, as it's more appropriately called, back 20 years ago, a Mac would be usable to you today. It would feel like a Mac. Whereas for those of us that grew up on, you know, what was prior to that, Mac OS 9, but, you know, 8 and 7.
System
and,
7.
And 6.
Yes.
System 7 and right. And System 6. This was a very different thing. It still had enough hints that it was like the Mac you used to know, but it was this Aqua interface that had all this stuff. It was this very, very different thing. And the idea of multitasking, aka running multiple apps at the same time, had sort of been bolted on to System 6.0.8, I want to say, and later. But it was very much this bolt-on sort of idea that, yeah, you could have two apps running at once, as opposed to just you run an app, you quit it, you're back to the Finder, then you run another app, and then you quit it, and now the Finder relaunches, right? Like, that was how it was. It was a very modal experience. And like I said, it got bolted on. You could have multiple things open, but Mac OS X was really the first time where it was like, okay, multitasking is you know, a first class citizen here. It's things work. It's always going to be that way.
Yeah.
And then, of course, add to that, we had a terminal and we all knew that there was this flavor of Unix underneath it, which was super exciting.
Yeah,
and quite
the
frankly,
terminal
is a thing that brought a terminal. That brought a lot of people over to the Mac, people that were comfortable with Unix and were like, okay, now Macs have a real operating system,
mm-hmm.
As opposed to this weird thing that we called, like you said, System 6 and 7 and Mac OS 8 and 9.
Yeah.
So it really legitimized the Mac in the land of computing.
Yeah.
Now, to be fair, I always thought it was interesting that, you know, Windows machines started as DOS machines, sort of bolt-ons to DOS machines, system Macs, whatever OS it was weird, you know, sort of homegrown operating system that worked there. And then Windows evolved, started with Windows NT, had VMS at its core, mm-hmm. which was a mainframe operating system. And then, of course, Mac OS X had Unix at its core, which was a mainframe operating system. What it was is that our home computers got powerful enough to run these real operating systems.
Yeah.
Ironically, were at their core than the operating systems that they had previously run. And it was because these operating systems they previously run had to be built to be these like tidy little efficient things that could run on, you know, processors and things like that. So
yeah.
It was an interesting thing, but it definitely was the legitimization of the Mac.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas Windows had that legitimization, I mean, I may, prior. So it definitely was an important sort of seismic shift in so many different ways, which is great. Yeah.
As someone who hadn't used Mac, and it may just be a coincidence of time, but I don't think it is. It was very noticeable that kind of pre that period of time, it was a bit like if you knew a friend or a family member had a Mac, it was a bit weird. Then lovely, brightly colored computers came along, and then this operating system that's done all the things you've described and that was really easy for non-people to use and understand.
Yeah.
And I think that legitimization, we really shouldn't look over that, because I think a lot of the reason that Apple is the company it is today, we can, you know, obviously we can talk about the iPhone a lot and we do, but I think the way it brought Apple computers into the mainstream,
mm-hmm.
I think probably shouldn't be underestimated.
Well, and I think part of, like, I think both of you sort of put that together. Like, Dave, you said it legitimized computing to a lot of people. And I think that's absolutely true, because I remember spending a fair amount of time in the terminal, definitely initially. I mean, I still open it up for stuff today. Like, I will open it later, I guarantee. But I remember opening it to do a lot of things that I wanted to do because I was familiar with Unix operating systems. So, like, sometimes it was just faster than trying to figure out what the UI was trying to give me. And so on the one hand, like, it made it a lot more legitimate platform in that way. But also, like Charlotte was saying, you know, it made more sense, kind of, if you had not looked at an Apple computer before and you looked at Mac OS 9 and then you looked at OS 10, OS 10 made a little more sense overall. And the built-in multitasking and that sort of stuff, like where you didn't have to, you know, quit the Finder and then launch the Finder again and stuff. It was a very iOS experience almost on those older machines. So, you know, as you know, because they were very easy to dismiss because they looked like toys and stuff a lot. You know, Charlotte was referring to the gumdrop iMacs, you know, that sort of thing. And so having it also be something that was legitimate to end users, like I can look at this and I can see what's going on. You know, it felt familiar if you were coming from Windows, because like you would have a file exploring window open that you could double click on a folder and open to further contents and do things like, you know, that seemed familiar if you were using some other computing platform with a user interface. So it feels like that was a pretty interesting evolution and necessary, because otherwise I think that change is probably what gave us the Apple computer we have now. You know, whether I'm talking about the one in your pocket or the one hooked up to your television or the one on your arm or the one in your backpack. Mm. So I think that makes a huge difference. So You should go check out the wrap up. We will have a link to that in the show notes. I want to thank both of you for being here today. Dave, thanks so much for coming by.
Yeah, thanks for having me. This was fun.
And Charlotte, thanks so much for being here to share your macOS 10 using experience.
Thanks. Yeah.
I'm your host, Kelly Gamott. I will talk to all of you tomorrow. In the meantime, be excellent to each other and let's be careful out there.